Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference one word at a time. Now, here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. On today's show, we're talking about love. We look at some of the most critical skills we need to thrive in a relationship and some of the most detrimental patterns to finding lasting love. To help us navigate all of this, my guest is Linda Carroll. Her new book, Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting, Wholehearted Love. Linda Carroll is a returning guest to Conversations Live. She's a therapist and couples coach with more than 3 decades' experience. She says her own 35-year marriage is the primary source of her knowledge when it comes to the cycles of love. We begin our conversation today with a quick look at how the novel corona pandemic has affected relationships in China and what we can learn from that. And as much of our country is currently quarantined, or about to be, partners are forced together 24/7. My guest shares her vast experience as a therapist and long-term relationship expert on how we can get through these difficult times and how our relationships can thrive during normal times. Her book again, Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting, Wholehearted Love. And here's my guest, Linda Carroll. Well, I want to welcome you back, Linda Carroll, to the show. It's been a while, right?
It's been a while, 6 years maybe, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, something like that. And very appropriate time. We were chatting before we came live on this conversation about, you know, people are being cooped up right now. And no matter how much you love someone, that can put strains on relationships. And you read an interesting fact in about China. Tell us about that.
Well, I read that that people, after they got out of the forced quarantine, were lining up at the courthouses to get divorced, and somebody wrote an article that said, you know, babies are divorced. I mean, that's the other possibility, that when you're together 24/7, if you don't have the skills to know how to be with another person who is not you, and the differences will never seem more exaggerated than now, then what's going to happen is you're just going to go into some kind of lockdown or power struggle or those things that we do when we're under stress. Or if you're in the sort of mergy part of the relationship, then that's where the babies come in.
Right.
But I think that we need skills more than ever for people who are in long-term relationships. You know, my husband gets up and he reads the paper in the morning from cover to cover. He reads a really good, full-on paper, and then he doesn't want to talk about what's going on the rest of the day. I want to talk about it all the time. And so, I mean, we just start with those differences right off the bat. You know, I want to get supplies for 5 years, and he says, well, we have local farmers. We don't need to do anything more than a week. And I do a lot of online work with couples, and I'm hearing two things. I'm hearing people who are with another person or a family that they're feeling they're just going crazy because of the differences in how they are with each other. I'm also hearing from singles who are wishing they were with somebody. So the stress of this quarantine that we're in, this time that we're in, I think we need to have some very different kinds of skills to get through it. And so my book, Love Skills, I was talking to my publicist this morning. I said, I wish I had put on it, instead of the keys to unlocking lasting wholehearted love, I wish I had said love skills in the time of quarantine, because that's really what it is about.
Right, right. It really came out at a good time to help people. It's very, very difficult because none of us, you know, unless you're a stay-at-home mom and they still go to the park and, you know, play dates, none of us are used to being cooped up. And I read an amusing Twitter post yesterday which said, now I understand why my dog gets so excited about walks. And I was like,
oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
That's so wonderful.
We were in very troubled times right now, no doubt, and we want to try and get this through this. You know, my goal in the show is always to try and get through life as, you know, strong and as healthy as possible, and so I'm glad you're with us today.
So glad to be here. I really am.
I want to ask you, because I thought this was really interesting. I know you've been a therapist and couples coach for over 3 decades. You write and speak about and teach about relationships. And I read that throughout your adult life, you've studied psychology, poetry, philosophy, spirituality, and literature. And you've come to understand how those realms intertwine and enrich one another. So let's kick off with that, Linda.
Well, I think that if you look at the stories and legends through the ages, there so many of them are about love. Because if you look back through the centuries of ballads and poetry and storytelling, one of the primary themes is about love. And it's about love in the different stages, falling in love, courtly love. And then it's about the disaster of love, the pain of love, the separation of love. And so the first book, which was Love Cycles, was really based on all of these different ways that I have studied life and human beings. And they pointed to the same thing, that there are cycles in nature, there are cycles in relationships. And to know those, I think, empowers us so that we don't think something's wrong when we're in one of the harder cycles.
Right. So the last book, the last time we talked was your other book, Love Cycles, The 5 Essential Stages of Lasting Love. And I understand you consider this new book, Love Skills, a companion workbook to that book.
Well, yes, but because it started out as a workbook, because I've been teaching this class for 25 years, which is called, well, it's called many things, but most recently Love Skills, and my editor thought it would be great to do a companion book, but as I started to write the book, it kind of wrote itself in a different direction, and what it really became was, for myself, an exploration of how I got here in my own life, how I started to do this work, and how my husband and I changed our relationship from one that had a lot of power struggles in it into one that is most of the time, not always, but most of the time is pretty wholehearted. And so one of the things that happened is, as I started to write the book, is I found myself breaking a rule. I don't know if it's a written rule, but it's a rule that I've always seen with therapists who write books about how to, and they talk about Sally and Fred came into my office, and I found myself writing about my own relationship. So throughout the whole book, there's a lot of reflection about the power struggles and about the ways that my partner and I, who are so attracted to the differences in each other, also have struggled with those differences. And I really share those stories, so I make it about myself. So that's one of the things that's different in the book. But it also took its own narrative. So there's lots of exercises in it, but there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, hearing personal experiences from a therapist, as you said, it's quite unusual. There are some who do it. I've had them on the show. But it also shows that despite all of your skills, you've still had to adapt and learn new ways of doing things. And if you've, you know, had that kind of education and still had to work at it, I think, you know, you're coming from a place of, yeah, been there, done that, and bought the T-shirt kind of viewpoint, right?
Right. It's like enlightenment. I'm there now. I studied enlightenment. Now I'm there.
Right.
Yeah. You know, our relationships are always going through different cycles, and it's one of the things I talk about when I give talks about how you just get it right, and then you get something comes in, and there's a new kind of stress in life.
Right.
Either it comes from somebody, one of you gets sick, or somebody loses their job, or gets a new job, or kids leave home, or whatever it is. And now this is exaggerated, because what's happened now is that we have fear, and we have different ways that people handle fear.
Mm-hmm.
When this was just beginning, one of the things I do to help myself feel better, as crazy as it sounds, I look at the worst scenario and I plan for it. That is a strategy, and it actually works okay for me. My husband looks at the best scenario, and it goes totally optimistic and won't even consider the worst scenario. So I wanted to buy a year's supply of food, especially dog food, for our puppy, and he didn't want to even go down that road and talk about it. And as I talk to my friends, as I talk to my clients, I find that those differences really start right now, because when we're anxious, we do what it is that we want to help ourselves, help us calm down. So I want to talk about what's going on. He's a watercolor artist, and he wants to paint. So he's in his studio painting, you know, a beautiful scene, and I'm watching the news trying to get yet another understanding of what's happening. And because we understand this about each other, we can be more gentle than if we didn't.
Yes.
But we've still had moments where I've gone in and said, I just heard something really important. And he'll say, I'm trying to get this tree right. I can't hear it right now. And thank goodness I know these things, and so does he, because we can laugh at ourselves. But the exaggeration of anxiety is what really creates trouble with
right.
couples. And so that's why we need the skills to be
right.
able to get through not just life, but times like this.
Right. So let's look at some of those. You know, a key theme running throughout the book, I love this expression, because it gives you a really good visual, I think. You say the wave is not the ocean. So talk to us about what that means.
Yes, and it's a great meditation for the time we're in too, Vicki.
Absolutely.
And this is a time, like some of the times that we've all been through in our life, 9/11, various, you know, terrible disruptions and tragedies, and yet those are old stories now, and they impact us in ways, sometimes for the better. The wave is, we're in a moment, and it's true in our relationships also. When you're in the best space ever, and this can be problematic in a relationship. You go to dinner with your partner. You have the most wonderful, intimate connection. You talk about things that have been sort of off limits, but you talk easily about those things. And you have, you know, this waves of juicy, sexy, vulnerable connection. And the next morning you wake up and have the same fight about what kind of coffee to use. And it all feels impossible. And neither of those moments are the truth of the relationship. It's a wave. The wave is sometimes really a wave that feels good. It's warm. Sometimes it doesn't feel good. And part of the mindfulness work that I practice and teach is reminding myself this is just the moment. It feels, right now, it feels just wonderful with my partner.
Right.
And the next morning, it's okay if it doesn't, because that's also going to pass. But when we hold on to those moments and say, this wonderful moment has to last forever, or this terrible moment is the whole truth, that's when we get into trouble. We have to let it keep changing.
Yes. And I'm going to jump around in my interview a little here because, you know, based on what we're talking about now, I think it's appropriate to bring this in, because this is another thing that I love that you say. You say, we think the three most important words are, I love you, and you say one of the most powerful things we can say is, tell me more.
Oh,
and
yes.
Right now, that really speaks to me.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? Isn't it perfect for right now?
Mm.
You want me to talk about that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, a conversation, so if we're not talking about what's going on right now, let's just say a normal conversation, your partner comes home and you say, how was your day? And they say, well, I really don't like the person I work with. And so or I had a bad day because this project isn't going well. So what we usually do is we say, oh, I know just what you mean, I had a bad day too. Or, well, I thought that person was trouble. Or, I had an idea about your project that might make it go better. So we take the conversation and we take it off in the direction we want it to go in. But if we stop and we say, tell me more about what's going on, we give it back to the other person, we get to find out all kinds of things about them, and we become a really good listener, which is such an important skill. And the longer you've been with someone, I think the more important it is to remember you don't know everything about them, and you can always discover new things. So when we look at what's going on now in the world, and I say well, this is something I really want to do today, and he says, I don't want to do that. I want to go for a bike ride. You know, instead of arguing about whether what I want to do or what he wants to do, what feels really important for us to do right now. He'll like, okay, this just happened. This is a real example. My husband's a veterinarian. He's wonderful with animals. We have a dog we adore. And I just read something that said we need people to take foster animals from shelters. Well, I'd be so happy if I had 16 animals around me. So I said, I have a great idea. Why don't we foster an animal? He said, I don't want another animal. Now, what I could have said is, why not? This is a time we all have to put in, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
Or he could have said, there you go again. You know, you're always wanting to do more and more and more. But we didn't. What we both knew how to do was, I said, tell me what you feel about having another animal. And that took a lot of discipline, because I really wanted it to go my way. And he began to talk about the reasons for him, which were really made sense to me, even though they weren't my reasons. And then he said to me, you know, I feel like you really got it. You really heard me. So now I want to hear you.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think we could gain about getting an animal from the shelter. And as I explored my reasons, I felt like he really heard me. And then we just put it down. Instead of arguing about it, we put it down and said, well, I feel heard. And let's come back to it and talk about it in a week. So that's an example of how Tell Me More can take a difference of opinion into a direction that actually brings you closer rather than puts you into some kind of power struggle.
Right. Three little words, Tell Me More. It's a very generous way of being. And you say generosity in any relationship is one of the best traits, especially in a marriage. So that's one example of generosity. What would be another example?
Well, it's also an example of a lot of self-discipline, because I didn't want to have the conversation.
Right. Right.
I knew him why right. He was being selfish and why we needed another dog, and I wanted to get my way, but I know better than I know that doesn't go well. So generosity is something we can practice, and we can get better at it. So what was the question that you asked again? Sorry, I went off on a tangent.
What generosity might look like, you know, other than the example we just talked about?
Yeah, generosity might be that you want to do something. Well, let me think about how that works. I think that the generosity part comes up because we realize that our partner is not us, and that sometimes generosity means just making room for their opinion. Sometimes it is about what do they want to do. I want to watch the news at night. I have a particular person I love watching on the news. And last night he didn't want to do it, and he said, let's make dinner together. I said, I really want to hear what's going on. He said, I know, but you've been listening all day. And, you know, I thought to myself, it wasn't a power struggle, and I didn't feel like he was bullying me. I felt like, you know what, he really just wants to play together in the kitchen,
right.
And I can do that. And I said, and it felt generous, because I really didn't want to do it. I said, that's fine. I don't need any more news. And you know what he did? He said, sweetie, listen, why don't you go watch the news? I know you love to watch Rachel, and I'll make dinner, and I'll come sit with you, and afterwards we can do something together. So it was like we both gave something back and forth. Now, it doesn't always go that way. I don't want to represent myself as someone that has arrived in anything, but we both know how to practice this. Generosity means there's room for you in who you are, and that's different than who I am.
Yes. And so let's talk about defensiveness, because that comes up in many situations, not just in love relationships. It comes up in work relationships. We're having to work differently. You know, I work remotely a lot, but for many people that's very different experience since they're in quarantine. And I was talking with a colleague the other day, and she said, everybody's so defensive when you bring something up, because they're used to being in a room together, and somehow the remoteness is allowing that to happen. But in a relationship, you say it's one of the most detrimental traits in a marriage. So why and how?
Because I think that people, humans are annoying. We can't not be annoying, and it's not that we're bad. It's that the things that I do that feel good to me are going to sometimes how loud we like music to play. Somebody likes it soft, somebody likes it loud. It's like roommate trouble, and we get into roommate trouble. And And what happens is we need to talk about those things. And if a person is highly defensive, and I think some people just come more defensive than others, that anything that their partner says that even has a tweak of criticism makes them feel so bad, they immediately push back. I mean, if you're with a defensive person and you say, honey, you forgot the spinach, what they hear is you're totally irresponsible and you've never done anything right. And it's not that the other person necessarily did something wrong. It's just that we have to negotiate things, where we put clothes, who does the laundry, how we park the car, where we plant the cherry tree, and that sometimes that protest, if a person is defensive, what they hear is not a protest, or they don't hear the other person's wish. What they hear is a criticism towards them. And what can happen is that the person who isn't so defensive stops making complaints. And if you aren't able to make a healthy complaint, not a criticism, a healthy complaint, what happens is you become resentful. And that resentment takes a form that is often withdrawal or criticism about other things. So I think about it this way, Vicki, is that we're connected and that there's always some kind of rupture that follows connection. A little rupture. You know, somebody forgot to put the butter away. It doesn't have to be big. And then there is a protest. Hey, you forgot to put the butter away. And then there's some kind of repair, like, oh, sorry, I forgot, I'll do it. And then you're reconnected. But if you don't protest because you have a defensive person with you and you are afraid of the consequences of even saying that, it goes underground, it goes under the rug, and the rug gets very, very lumpy. And I think defensiveness is not something that some people just come more thin-skinned. And the most successful ways I've seen people deal with it is when they're really able to talk about it. You know, I tend to get defensive, honey, and so when you ask me to go back and get the spinach, what I first do is I criticize myself, but I know that's my problem. I mean, that's a very conscious way to respond, but I think beginning to really look and see, am I defensive, or am I with somebody who's defensive, and does that stop me from saying what I need to talk about, and how does that play out if I'm not talking about the things I need to talk about?
Right, right. One of the things you have in the book that I think, again, even though we're kind of being cooped up right now in self-isolation or quarantine, you talk about four transition times during the day which are critical. You know, I heard a report a couple of, 3 or 4 weeks back on TV that said, you know, before all this world chaos began, it said the average couple who have children at home spend an average of only 13 minutes a day together in quality time. I find that really hard to believe, but according to the study, that's what they said. And so one of the things you say that is really important are these four transition times during the day: waking up, parting for the day, coming back home together, and going to sleep. Talk to us about that, please.
Yes, I think 13 minutes is a lot. That's not my experience with people.
You think it's even less than that?
That it's less. That
wow.
It's less time. You know, that they're often so tired at the end of the day. But when people complain that they don't have time, and now we've got a lot of time, don't we? But that's a common complaint I get with couples. We don't have time to have time. I ask them if they'd start with 8 minutes a day. Will you do 8 minutes a day? Can you find 8 minutes? And mostly they say yes. Sometimes they say, we don't have it. So then I say, will you do four minutes a day? If they say no, they're not very good candidates for coaching. So we start with what they are able to do. They have to be able and willing to do it willingly. So I say, in these moments of transition, put in the intention and quality time just for that small amount of time. When you wake up in the morning, you don't even have to talk. You can just rub each other's neck or say, tell me about your dream. 2 minutes, and then you want to build up to more, you know, 3, 4, even 5. But that first moment when you wake up and you connect before anything else happens. Second moment is when you leave for the day. when you separate, and now it's maybe going into a different room and people working remotely, but when you move into your own space away from that connection with your partner, taking the time to say goodbye, hope you have a really good day, you know, I love you, I wish you well, whatever it is you want to do, whatever it is you want to say, here's some apricots, but some way, you know, you bless or you give your support or love to them for that day. That doesn't take long, but it's leaving feeling good about each other.
Right.
The third time is when you come back in at the end of the day. Just 1 minute to sit down and to say, how was your day? I'm glad to see you. And then the last moment is when you go to sleep for the night. And sometimes I tell people they don't even have to talk during those moments. Just, again, touch each other. And I think that starts to create goodwill. And the more it starts to create goodwill and that good oxytocin, which is a chemical that when we feel close and connected, it makes us want more of the other person, that we're going to naturally extend that to 3 minutes, 4 minutes, five minutes. And the opposite's true is if my partner comes in and I say, how are you? And he says, I'm too busy to talk, I'm going to back off and not want to go towards him again. But if he says, I'm so glad you asked, I'm going to do it more. That reinforcement's going to create more. So we start small, but we make those small moments.
Yeah. Right, right. And, you know, thinking of singles who, you know, are wishing they had a partner with them right now, one of the things you talk about in the book, which, of course, is so very true, you say the wholeness we seek in a partnership has to begin with ourselves. So what can somebody like that in that kind of situation be working on?
Well, I think it starts by, well, one of the words that I used a minute ago was intention, to even know what your intention is. You know, the first relationship we have, and the last one we have, is with ourselves. And I can't really put out to my partner what isn't in me at some level. You know, if I start with, oh, I heard this radio program, I have to be nice and say something nice in the morning, that's not being with myself. That's like being a parrot and doing something that doesn't really have me in it. So I start by saying, okay, where's my intention? What do I really feel? Am I ready to do this? Am I willing to do this? And how can I be the best in what I do? And from that place comes the next thing, which is, how are you this morning? But it starts by me being in touch with my desire to really do it. One of the things that I have heard people say about the time we're in is a great inquiry is, who do I want to be during this time? How do I want to go through it? And I think that's a great question to ask in our relationships all the time, because if we're just using these skills because we want it to get better sort of automatically, it's not going to work. So start with, first of all, are you taking care of yourself in the way you need to feel your own wholeness? Are you doing the things you need for your body, your mind, your spirit, your exercise, whatever those things are that help you feel okay in yourself? And out of that well-being comes something that we can extend.
I love it. The book is called Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting Wholehearted Love. You can find out, I know listeners can find out much more about Linda Carroll at her website, lindacarroll.com. What would you like to leave our listeners with today, Linda?
I'd like to leave them with one of my favorite quotes from the book, actually, is that love is a feeling and a relationship is a skill set. And anybody can learn the skills. We can all learn the skills, and they help us love better and longer.
And there are some great exercises in this book. I mean, some that are just worth doing whether you're in a relationship or not, quite honestly, you know. So.
Yes, yes. We're all in relationships, though, aren't we?
Mm-hmm. With ourselves too, right?
Yes, for sure. That's where it starts.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate it, Linda.
Oh, it's good to talk to you again, Vicky. Thank you.
Yeah.
Take care.
You too. And again, you can find more about Linda at lindacarroll.com, the book Love Skills, The Keys to Unlocking Lasting Wholehearted Love. And if you have comments, questions, or feedback on today's show, you can reach me through our website, conversationslive.net, where you'll also find more than 700 podcasts and 1,200 plus
guest interviews. Thanks for joining us today. Until next week, stay safe, stay strong. We'll get through these crazy times together.
Radio is very competitive. Shows soar in popularity and then flame out. Sometimes, however, a real connection is made with an audience, and success blooms year after year. For over a decade, Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has built a loyal following thanks to inspiring and stimulating conversation. Longevity, loyalty, exclusivity. Smart advertisers seek it out. With Vicki's valuable audience, the search is over. Discover the affordable, effective ways to advertise your business. Log on to conversations.live.net. That's conversationslive.net today.